Sometimes, in our well-intentioned effort to meet God on our level, we tend to exchange reverence for coziness. But tragically, sometimes our casual posture, when standing in the presence of the Holy One, lacks the respect that He deserves. Today, on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll continues his biographical study of Moses. In this lesson, we'll observe Moses trekking up Mount Sinai to encounter the living God. From this exchange, four principles emerge that will deepen our spiritual walk. We're in Exodus chapter 19. Chuck titled his message, Sinai, Where Moses Met God.
Jutting out above the great wilderness desert of Sinai is this gigantic series of peaks called Sinai. And there, God planned to meet with His people. Now notice the preparation that God required. I find in these several verses, 3 through 15, four specific things that God required of the people. He brought them to this place, but before He ever gave His revelation to them, He required four specifics. Verse 3, follow along and mark them. Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the sons of Israel, You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings, and brought you to myself. Now then, here's the first. If you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession among all the peoples, for all the earth is mine. You shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the sons of Israel. That last statement was directed to Moses. Moses, take that statement back down the mountain to the people. The first requirement was a willingness to obey. Verse 7. Moses came and called the elders of the people together and set before them all these words which the Lord had commanded him. Now listen to the answer. Just imagine 2 million people in unison. All the people answered together and said, All that the Lord has spoken we will do. So Moses goes back up the mountain. Verse 9. The Lord said to Moses, Behold, I shall come to you in a thick cloud, in order that the people may hear when I speak with you and may also believe in you forever. Then Moses told the words of the people to the Lord. Notice the second requirement is in verse 9, a sensitivity to hear. Moses, not only do I want them willing to obey, I want them sensitive to hear when I speak. Now that will cause them to believe in you, Moses, when they hear what I am saying. So Moses took the word back to God, saying, Yes, they're ready to hear. Now, what is God doing? If I may interrupt your thinking for a moment. He is laying the groundwork for communications. Now, there is a third. Verse 10. The Lord said to Moses, Go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their garments. Let them be ready for the third day. For on the third day, the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. Verse 14. So Moses went down from the mountain to the people and consecrated the people, and they washed their garments. Requirement number 3, there was to be consecration of heart. Not only were they to have clean garments, but the clean garments were to speak of a clean heart. There was to be no soil of their soul. They were to be clean, pure, without and within, even to the point of washing up. They were to be ready to hear in clean apparel. There was one more, verse 12. Now think about this as we read it. And you shall set bounds for the people all around. All around what? All around the mountain. This area where I'm going to meet with you, Moses, set a boundary, a fence, a barrier for the people. And then say, Beware that you do not go up on the mountain or touch the border of it. Whoever touches the mountain shall surely be put to death. No hand shall touch him, but he shall surely be stoned or shot through, meaning with spear or arrow he will be killed. Whether beast or man, he shall not live. Verse 14, he went down from the mountain to the people. Now look across at verse 21. The Lord spoke to Moses, go down and warn the people, lest they break through to the Lord to gaze, and many of them perish. He wanted to be sure no one came up that mountain but precise people he would call, Moses and a few others. And Moses said to the Lord, verse 23, the people cannot come up to Mount Sinai, for thou didst warn us, saying, set bounds about the mountain and consecrate it. So the fourth, there was to be a deep respect for God's presence. So deep, so profound was this respect that they were not to touch the mountain. They were to wait upon God to speak to Moses and through him to them. Verse 20, the Lord came down on Mount Sinai to the top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up. What was it like up there? Listen to verses 16, 17, 18, and 19. Let's just read them. Just slowly and meditate on what we're reading. Verse 16. Came about on the third day when it was morning. There were thunder and lightning flashes and a thick cloud upon the mountain and a very loud trumpet sound, so that all the people who were in the camp trembled. And Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet God. They stood at the foot of the mountain. Now Mount Sinai was all in smoke because the Lord descended upon it in fire, and its smoke ascended like the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain trembled violently. When the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moses spoke, and God answered him with thunder. Oh, man. That was some kind of experience. We have a little ripple of our earth here, and we have a funny feeling, and then we go back to normal. But it's not often that you see a granite mountain shaking, nor witness thunder, lightning, clouds, and blasting long blasts of trumpets in the heavens, knowing that God is ready to meet you. Can you imagine how Moses felt when the Lord said to Moses, come on, come on up, Moses. Oh, wow, you know, what do you do now? How do you do it? How do you carry on? I'll tell you, it was with fear and trembling that he made that journey up into the clouds. What was the reason that God wanted to meet with Moses? Why did the meeting occur? There were two reasons. Look at chapter 20 and verse 20. How healthy they are. What good reminders. Chapter 20, verse 20, Moses said to the people, do not be afraid, that is, frightened in the flesh, for God has come in order to test you, and now notice, in order that the fear of him may remain with you, so that you may not sin. There's the first reason. God wanted to establish a healthy fear of the Almighty to deter sin. You know, when you have a proper fear of God, you live a cleaner life. Any person who is born again and sins willfully has momentarily blocked out his fear of God. You do, and I do. When you and I actively engage in sin, we consciously put aside what we know to be the truth about God, and we lie to ourselves in saying, we'll get by. Moses was God's instrument of revealing to the people the fear of the Almighty. And again, at the risk of sounding like I am haranguing or grinding an axe, that is also missing in our era. This wholesome fear of the Almighty, because it allows us to do as we please, that is, when it is absent. You can live as you please if you know you're not being seen and you won't get caught. You do as you like. But if down deep inside you know there is a loving and holy God who will not let you get away with that, it'll deter your life, that is, the life to sin. Now, that's what the Lord wanted to establish first with the people of Israel, a holy, righteous, pure concept of His presence. All right, now there's another reason. Chapter 24, verse 12. This is clearly defined. The second reason was to communicate written instructions for the people to obey. 24:12, the Lord said to Moses, "Come up to me on the mountain and remain there." Now, here's the reason. "I will give you the stone tablets with the law and the commandment which I have written for their instruction." And the second reason was to give Moses written instructions for the people to obey. Isn't it great of God to have done that? You know, this is the first time in all of history that God ever wrote down His word. Up until the time of Moses, there was no written word of God. But now there is. All right, now that we know the reasons that Moses was on the mountain, let's answer the question, what did God reveal? Well, we have just seen right here in verse 12, the first thing, He revealed His written word. The first thing that God gave to this man who met with Him was His written word. He took the time to inscribe it in stone. He broke off a peak of Sinai. He honed it down so that it would be able to be handled by Moses, and He wrote it with His own finger. Look at 31:18. Still in Exodus, the last verse of chapter 31, one of the few times you find God writing anything. He wrote the law and gave it His autograph. "When He had finished speaking with him on the mountain, He gave Moses the two tablets of the testimony, tablets of stone written by the finger of God." I don't think anyone has ever had in his possession a more valuable document. He had the autograph, the autographa from God's own finger. Now, there's another revelation that God gave, and look back in chapter 25, verses 8 and 9, just before I apply all of this to that number one priority. One more passage, 25, 8 and 9. After God revealed the written word, He revealed the design of the tabernacle. 25:8, "Let them construct a sanctuary for me that I may dwell among them according to all that I am going to show you as the pattern of the tabernacle." The first mention now in all the Bible of the tabernacle. "And the pattern of all its furniture, just so you shall construct it." Now, He gave them the word of God that they might know His mind and obey. He gave them the design for the tabernacle that they might build it and He might come and dwell among them. He didn't want to remain on a mountain. He wanted to be accessible and available, but in keeping with His own design, He would dwell in a certain place. That's the tabernacle. That's another study all to itself, which we won't get involved in our study of the life of Moses. Now then, I told you when I began the message that I find in these passages that seem to be terribly dated some highly significant information. I want to go into that right now. I believe that the number one priority for you in this year, and it will determine more than any other single thing, your life of victory, is the matter of the matter of meeting regularly with God. And I think when I say that, I strike a note of conviction, or the Lord does, in many a heart. You've met the Lord. You've been through the Red Sea, as it were. You've come through the wilderness, but you haven't come yet to that mountain, that place of meeting, where you consistently and regularly have time with Him. We often refer to it glibly as the quiet time. It isn't always quiet, those meetings with God. But for the sake of a better term, that is what I have reference to, that time of devotional strengthening of your life. And I have every Christian in mind when I say these things. I want to suggest from the passages we've looked at four principles to remember and to apply. Number one, to meet regularly with God, you need a place. I think it's noteworthy that the very first thing that's mentioned in the chapter we studied, chapter 19, is that they came to a place where they met with God. Now, it's not practical for you to wait until you can find a mountain. Christian conference grounds are great, but if you wait for that, you're going to be carnal a long time before you get there. Forest Home or Mount Hermon or the Firs or wherever else you may wish to meet, even a cabin down by the lake or one up in the mountains or down by the surf. If you wait until you get to those places, you're going to spend a lot of time out of fellowship with God. You need to have a place that's accessible. Remember, when they came to that mountain, they were in the wilderness. They camped in the wilderness, and there was their meeting place with God. You need to have the place in the realm of your wilderness where you camp, namely your dwelling. You need to have a place in your dwelling where you meet with the Lord. Let me even be more practical than that. You must provide yourself with that place. You need three things: a desk, a light, and quietness for that place. It may be in your bedroom where you can close the door and be alone. It may best be in a part of your den or kitchen area, wherever you can be all alone. You need to have a place to be with God. You know, we in our family are very convinced of this, so much so that it's built into the decoration, not decoration, but the decor of our home. Each one of our children has a desk. And they have been provided a desk, not an expensive desk, not a big, massive, attractive thing, but a place to write with a chair and a light. In fact, that's one of the first pieces of furniture we provide for their rooms. We provide it even before they know why they're getting a desk. And we help them know what to do when they are at the desk with the Lord. So that we have a rendezvous spot with God, and we build that into their thinking. Children don't just become godly. They need training. Your kiddos will see you and even attend with you in going to church, but they will not know how to be godly children and young people and young adults without training. How about giving some time to that, parents? I know a young fellow who was in a large family and they didn't have any other place, and so he chose the closet. Rigged up a light, put a desk, at least it had a door. Kind of quiet, kind of close, but it was a place. You will pardon the earthy illustration, the home in which I was raised, very small and an involved, busy family. My mom's place was the bathroom. And she put her books on the little stove that heated up the room. Put a little sign on the door that said, "Do not disturb." And we knew. She didn't want to be bothered. Now, busy mothers, you can't have your time with the Lord at breakfast time or supper time. That creates havoc. You will be disturbed, I want to tell you ahead of time. You've got to be practical about it. But you need time with God. Businessmen, your time, your best place might be at your office. I know a businessman where every morning he goes early purposely to spend time with the Lord. And if you were to call him on that line, you would interrupt his time with the Lord. That's his place. That's my place. That's not my wife's place. That's not my kid's place, but that's my place. You need to have your own place where you can sit down and identify some time with God. May I even say this? You, because you haven't planned a place, don't meet regularly with God. You can't have it sitting on the edge of your bed. You won't do it sitting on the sofa in the living room. You need a desk, you need a light, and you need silence. And you must be legalistic in preparing a place for that time with God.
We're in Exodus chapter 19, and there's still much more teaching ahead. Chuck Swindoll, our Bible teacher, titled today's message, Sinai, Where Moses Met God. Stick with us because Chuck has prepared important closing comments just for the Insight for Living family. And that's coming up in just a moment. But first, did you know that every message in the Moses series is paired with a Searching the Scriptures Bible study? This is an exclusive spiral-bound workbook prepared by Insight for Living. All 20 of Chuck's sermons in the series are included, so you can dig into the book of Exodus on your own. In addition to the Searching the Scriptures Bible study for Moses, you're also invited to purchase all 20 sermons on audio CD. The complete collection is in stock and ready to send your way. For these two resources, the Searching the Scriptures Bible study workbook and the audio CDs for Chuck's study on Moses, just go to insight.org or call us at 800-772-8888. And now, here's Chuck.
As I look back over the years, I can remember being in only two different deserts. They were thousands of miles from each other. One was the Mojave Desert, and that's the one you go through when you make a trip to or out of the state of California. And the other, of course, would be the desert of Judea, often called the wilderness. And we're talking so much desert there, you don't even see a green scrub brush, just a little plant growing here or there. It's all gravel and sand and rock. What you long for in deserts is an oasis, a place to quench your thirst, a place to find relief and some shade from a few unusual and rare palm trees. Insight for Living is an oasis in this desert-like world in which we live. We receive mail from people all around the world, literally, and they speak of our being a refuge in a time of storm, our being a hope for them in their hopeless situation. Some have even used the word oasis as they turn to us for relief, to find a reason to go on, as I often refer to it, to find hope in a hopeless generation. We intend to be that as long as we exist. And so that means I need to assure you of this. I am here for the long term. I'm not going anywhere else. We have a backlog of messages that go over 50 years of preaching. You've heard some of them you haven't. We're looking forward to putting together a new series of messages for you to find hope, to gain that sense of reason to go on, that purpose in this purposeless era, to find joy in a joyless society. We want to be all of that and more for all of you. And I've never been more sincere in saying something. And so I add, as I close these remarks, the year 2024 has not been without its challenges. You're aware of some of them, you're unaware of many of them that we've gone through. But what will help us the most? Your prayer support, as you call on the Lord to minister through our words as they are broadcast, as they come over various means of ministry, so that lives are touched, hearts are changed, the lost are saved, marriages are recovered, families are brought back together after being fractured. Your financial support is equally important. I want to urge you to think seriously about what the Lord would have you personally give so that the ministry of Insightful Living could go right on without a moment's break. And your support gives us the reason to press on, to plan ahead, to put those series together, to make it available to all who listen. And don't forget, by the way, to pray for those who've never come to Christ, that the year 2025 would be their year of conversion, their road to Damascus, their life change. I love you so much, and I thank you for all you mean to us. And I count on you to stand with us during the end of this year as you support us with your generosity. Thank you sincerely.
Thanks, Chuck. All of us here at Insight for Living are deeply grateful for your generosity. As we approach the deadline of December 31st, we invite you to give a year-end gift to Insight for Living. No matter the size, God will use your contribution to reach men and women around the world with His love and grace. Call us at 800-772-8888, or you can give through our secure website at insight.org/donate. If you prefer to send a check in the mail, just address your envelope to Insight for Living, Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas 75034. Again, that's Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas 75034. Our phone number again is 800-772-8888. And online, go to insight.org/donate. I'm Bill Meyer. Chuck Swindoll continues our biographical study of Moses, a man of selfless dedication, Monday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Sinai, where Moses met God, was copyrighted in 1976, 1978, 1981, 1985, 1998, and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.